Hi there, Craig Wilkinson here. Welcome to another episode of Dangerous But Good. I am delighted to have, for me, a very important guest today, Sitle Moy. Sitle is the head of a wonderful organization called Hotel Hope. And Hotel Hope takes in orphan kids, abandoned kids, and feeds them, clothes them, educates them, fathers them, mothers them, and then helps them to find homes. It's a beautiful, beautiful organization. And Sitle, I've been looking forward to this conversation. Welcome, brother.
Thank you very much. It's a joy to be here, finally.
Yes, it's taken a while to get it together.
Excited.
But I'm just, you know, I mean, let's first get into the man, Sitle. You know, I've known you for many, many years. And you worked in Alexandra Township for many years with a organization called Rays of Hope. And now you're with Hotel Hope as a surrogate father, as the leader of an organization that looks after kids who have been abandoned. What drives the man, Sitle, to use your talents, skills, and abilities to for NGO purposes, for ministry purposes, for instead of getting into a corporate and just pursuing a career, the desire to actually have an impact? Well, you know, where does that come from?
Yes, thanks, Craig, for that question. I was born and bred in Soweto, so I grew up and in one of the townships. I was raised by a single mom. And who basically, from being a domestic worker when I was born, went on to become a teacher and then went on to become a school principal.
Wonderful.
And has really had a huge influence. Incidentally, she passed recently. And so I was born during the time when South Africa was changing. And so I remember one day when she arrived at home and she had a piece of paper and she put it in front of me and said, Sitle, you are going to be going to a white school. And, you know, that was, I didn't really know what that was because I had gone to a primary school in Soweto. And so she said to me, South Africa is changing. Now there are opportunities for you to go to the kind of school that we were not allowed to go to. And so I would like you to do it. And I'm not asking, I'm telling you.
No choice.
And you will thank me later, you know. And daunted by all of that, I was one of the first in that street because she had worked so hard for so many years and actually could afford for me to go to that school. And I think what I saw there going to that school for the first time really has really shaped me. Coming from where I came from, I went and I saw a school that looked like a resort or a hotel, something I'd never seen in my whole life. And so here I was traveling from Soweto and, you know, getting into the bus, going into, you know, suburbia and just seeing these very two different worlds, you know, where, you know, there was deprived, you know, very little that was around, and seeing, you know, where there was just access and, you know, 11 fields, you know, in that school, 100 and something, you know, from a school that, you know, had around 13 classrooms for over 1,000 children. And so that always struck me as just the things that I needed in this environment to so that those children can actually thrive in the world that they're in. But also went on and was involved in starting a work in Soweto. And here I was thinking, you know, I am one of those who actually have the list, but realizing that so many young people, you know, do not have a father or a mother, you know, to look after them. They are being raised by grandmothers. They don't have anybody who's checking whether they are going to school or not. And so for me, these experiences made me realize that this world, actually, there is very little. There is just so much injustice. And therefore, you know, we who have something, whether we are men, you know, whether we've had opportunities to go to school, you know, whether we have been reared in families and in homes, you know, have a responsibility to close that gap. We have a responsibility to provide the things that we have received to others who have not. And so after studying law, you know, at Wits, you know, thanks to the education that I received, I really... I was challenged really to think about not just the law of man, you know, but also the law of God.
Right.
You know, as that being foundational, much more foundational, and the real source of prosperity, the real source of freedom, you know, the real source of transformation. Wonderful. So that's kind of how I got into
it. That's a beautiful story, man. That's a truly beautiful story, inspirational. I mean, that's that's a rallying cry to everybody. Huh? Man, whatever you've got, use it for good. You know, whatever privilege you have, whatever education, whatever strengths, use it to make a difference because the world needs that.
What does Spider-Man says? For whom much is given, hey, much is expected. That's what the Bible says. But the way that Spider-Man puts it is that, you know, with great power, there's great responsibility. And often we don't realize, you know, how much power is in our journey in the things that we have in our hands.
Beautiful.
Yeah, and they are there not for for ourselves, but actually they're for a purpose for the sake of others.
It's fantastic. You know, if every man and every woman had that attitude, this world would be free from injustice. It would be free from orphans. It would be free from the social issues that we face. Yeah. We were talking here before the podcast just about how South Africa is the most unequal country in the world. You have Alexandra. Poverty-stricken, and you have a stone's throw away, Sandton, the richest square kilometer in Africa. And damn, we need to get our act together, you know, to rally together those of us who have to be a danger to things like poverty and orphanhood. And you know, I salute you, Sitla. You're a you're a dangerous man. You're a good man. You're a nice man, but you're dangerous. You know, you're dangerous to the things that threaten society. And I mean, that's what this is all about. So kudos to you for seeing that and coming to the party.
Thank you.
One of the biggest challenges we have in South Africa, and that's why I'm so excited about our conversation, is fatherlessness. It's absent fathers. You know, the statistics show that 60% of children in South Africa are growing up without a present engaged father. And you've chosen to be a surrogate father to many. You have your own, but obviously you've chosen to be a surrogate father to others. And that's a beautiful thing. Tell us about that journey. How, you know, this is a very female-dominated world that you're in. The space of orphans and vulnerable children and preschool. And yet I've seen you in action with those babies. You know? they come alive, man. They want those daddy's arms to hold them. Tell us how that journey has been.
So I think, you know, having grown up myself, being raised by a single mom, and, you know, I look at my upbringing and I'm grateful, you know, for all that I've received. You know, however, you know, there are so many men who were part of my journey.
Right.
You know, who just saw potential. They saw, you know, sometimes gaps in my knowledge, and they chose to walk alongside me. A number of them were in the church, just acknowledging me.
Fantastic.
Acknowledgement for a boy coming from a man, you know, saying, actually, we see what you are doing, and you are doing well. We love it. And often it's not even big things. It's simply saying, we see, you know, and we,
just that acknowledgement.
We receive you.
That acknowledgement.
Exactly. And so just to have that as part of my journey, there are so many of them, you know, and sadly some of them are now passing, you know, because of age. However, you know, when I look back at my journey, a lot of the turning points, you know, where because of people who chose, the reason why I chose to go and do law, it was because of, you know, someone, you know, who said to me, you know, look at the example of Mandela, you know, and he was a, you know, he was a man, and he said, you've got to, you know, somebody who went on to be a lawyer, a respectable profession. However, it wasn't for himself, but it was for the rights of others. And so when he, and you know, when I went on to go to Bible college, you know, which was a big turning point in my life again, you know, it was somebody who chose to meet with me regularly for over a period of a year.
Right.
And it was a man. And they said to me, you know, you have certain gifts, you have certain these things. And I think for me, those voices spoke far more into my life than, you know, my mom even, you know, and others. And so I think I've come to realize, you know, the power, you know, in men, at least men speaking to men and men speaking to women.
Right.
And so, and I just remember having many, many periods where that was the case in my journey. But I think what also I have found is that, you know, when you go into these spaces, whether it's orphanages, whether it's schools, there is something about you being a guy that, you know, guys and children are attracted to.
Yes.
You know, they kind of go after you. And I used to wonder why that was the case. Right. You know, I used to wonder why, you know, they're saying, but Sihle, watch this. And, you know, and not to someone else, but Sihle, can you listen to this? You know, I want to show you this. Let me show you my drawing.
Right.
And so realizing that, you know, even though I felt inadequate perhaps in those spaces, that actually my voice was needed, my presence was needed. And sometimes I didn't know what to do, but actually just being there and noticing. And so I have, just enjoyed it, being in those spaces. And now I do create time, you know, instead of just being there or sitting in the office somewhere where I, you know, can, you know, bark orders, but I ensure that in my day, you know, I make time to be around the children and, you know, and the aunties that are in those spaces where, you know, in those women dominated spaces, as you say,
yes,
you know, they often watch when I walk in, you know,
and the kids come alive,
kids come alive. They come and they, you know, they want to climb, you know, they want to go high. Yeah, they want to hear your voice. They want to play with your beard.
Beautiful.
You know, it is just, you know, you realize how much you are needed and they watch and they see that something else is,
right,
you know, a different energy is coming in here, you know, that the children need.
It's beautiful.
So it's a real joy. And each day it reminds me of the privilege that I have and the power that I have because of that.
It's tremendous, Sihle. I mean, you raise a very profound point here. Both boys and girls need both men and women. And the feminine energy and the masculine energy are different.
They are.
Equally important, but different. Yeah. And there's a hunger. There's a hunger for the masculine energy. I've had exactly the same experience with young kids without a father. And there's an absolute draw to the masculine. I was sitting in a restaurant not long ago, and there was a woman with her son.
Yeah.
Young son. He must have been 7 or 8 years old. And I just started interacting with his son. And it was almost, not quite, but almost embarrassing the way he just, he wouldn't let me go.
Exactly.
He ended up on my lap. He was just, you know, and there's a cry in the hearts of young boys and young girls for masculine energy, but good masculine energy. Masculine energy that's powerful, but it's nurturing and loving and gentle and caring. And we need that as a nation, man. We need men to step up. Yes,
we do. I think that is my experience, you know, all the time, that there is almost a, you know, when the children are there in a restaurant or whatever, that actually they are not good. You know, people are surprised that, you know, there is a man notices them. One, you know, normally, you know, it's the women. Oh, look, but if a man notices them, and then there's some kind of interaction that happens, it's just, you know, powerful. And I've had exactly the same experiences where, you know, suddenly saying goodbye is so difficult now.
Yeah, the tears come. And they don't want to let you go because they love what you bring.
Yes. And so I do think as men, we do have a place, you know, in the lives of children, in the lives of particularly children that have grown up without that energy in their lives.
Yes.
And so I think every opportunity that we take to affirm, you know, and not harm, because those are the stories that so many hear of children being taken advantage of by men. Yeah. But actually, just being positive and acknowledging and being affectionate.
Absolutely. Yeah. Let's speak to the men of our nation. You know, many of the men in our nation were not fathered. Many men grew up and their role models were gangsters and drug users and uncles who beat their wives. And We need to fix that. There's a desperate, urgent need to fix that. You know, I've often, I believe without a doubt, with all my heart, if we can heal men, we can heal the world, we can heal society. But let's, I mean, what would you say to a South African man about his importance, about his value, about the need for him to step up as a strong, powerful, but good, gentle, loving, caring man? You know, what would you say from your experience, from doing that and seeing the hunger for it and also the response to that when you provide that?
I think it's so important for South African men and all of us as men to realize that we are made in the image of God.
Right.
You know, that we are made of good stuff.
Absolutely.
You know, that we... that regardless of mistakes that we may have made, you know, regardless of, you know, the things that we have done wrong, that actually there is much that we were created for good.
Yes.
And so often the message is that there is no good.
Right.
You know, toxic. That come from us.
Trash.
Exactly. We are trash. It's toxic. And I think often that we... You know, it resonates with us as well, because we've, you know, because of that, of the strength that we have and the things, you know, when we do go wrong, a lot of damage happens, and we've seen that happen.
Yeah,
and so I think if where we are reminded that we do have value, that we are good, and I think that. For men, creating space and time to be around other men.
Yes.
It kind of reminds us, because I think when we see, you know, other men making good decisions and being it inspires us. Suddenly, actually, we don't have to make that choice. You know, others are making that choice.
Right.
You know, and often well, if we know them and we are close to them, we see that they are not perfect.
Yes.
But we see that actually there are good choices they're making. They're making choices to be with their families. They're making choices to be a positive, not exploitative, to the opposite sex.
Yeah.
And for us, we are inspired by other men. And we see, I think so I would say, you know, being reminded we have value. And I think spaces like churches, are powerful spaces where you are reminded that you are made in the image of God, but also creating room in our lives to be with other men and to be vulnerable, you know, around other men.
Yes.
And it's hard, you know, because we can be competitive and we can feel that we will be judged. However, I think that that's what we need in order for us, you know, to be healed.
Right.
And to be... to be reminded of our value. So I think those two things will propel us. Mm-hmm. And I think when men are together, you know, and we have positive energy, we begin to plan of things that we can do, you know, to be a positive influence on others and to bring change to others.
Fantastic.
I have a group of men from Alex, you know, of whom when I hear what's happening in their lives, you know, I just think I'm doing nothing. You know, the kinds of challenges they are facing and yet the decisions that they are making for me, you know, make me feel like, you know, I am really behind. Yeah, I need to catch up.
They inspire you.
They inspire me. Yeah. And then often then we think, okay, this is what we can do together. And when we and men are united and we feel like we can make a difference in the lives of others, I think the things that happen are magical.
They are magic.
Yeah.
They are magic.
And so I think we need that.
100%. Hitler, I couldn't have put it better myself. I mean, the true masculinity is a beautiful gift to the world. Beautiful gift. And we often lose that in the struggles that men have and some of the bad decisions men as a collective have made. But this band of brothers is a powerful, powerful force for good.
Yeah.
Brothers who, as you mentioned, they need to be vulnerable to each other. We need to be able to share. You know, so often men get together, all they talk about is sport and soccer and women, you know. But we need to talk about the real issues of our heart. We face challenges. They say men are human too, and we are. You know, we break, we fear, we cry, and we need to sharpen each other.
Yeah.
You know, the biblical injunction that iron sharpens iron, you know, as men get together and we see each other doing things that are not ideal, we call each other out. We sharpen each other.
Yeah.
and as a band of brothers, the masculine energy is a powerful force.
It is.
And it must be a powerful force for good.
Yeah.
And I just, you know, what you were saying earlier and what I've experienced in my life is the hunger that youngsters, boys and girls, have for the masculine energy. I'll tell you a vulnerable story. Yeah. I had an interesting experience many years ago, you know, kind of in my early 40s. I was listening to a piece of music. It was a guy who was singing in the deepest baritone I've ever heard. Deep boy. It was actually called on stage by Elvis Presley. Shoot. I forget the guy's name. But he sang in this voice that was so deep and so resonant. It sounded like a trombone. And the strangest thing began to happen to me. As I heard this voice, deep, 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 resonant, it represented for me masculinity. Masculinity is core. You know, I said to you earlier, you got a deep masculine voice, and it's beautiful. I began to tear up. It touched something deep in my heart, and I realized, even in my early 40s, you know, I also had quite a journey. You know, a brother committed suicide, etc. The desire for the masculine in a powerfully positive way, totally non-sexual way, but just a way that this is masculine and this is powerful and this is good. It was singing, you know, it evoked an emotion in me which surprised me. So we need the masculine. We need the powerful, strong masculine. We need the band of brothers. We need men such as yourselves who step up with their arms to hold and nurture, but also with their voice to discipline, you know, and be powerful but good. And I'm inspired. I mean, I visited Hope, Hotel Hope, and saw you holding some of those babies. They didn't want to let go. They didn't want to let go, you know. I mean, they were, and even the moms that were there were saying, Sitle, you know, This child needs you, and so
often they are in awe of the know how the children respond, which is just amazing.
Well, it shows the lack, Sihle. It shows the lack of masculine nurturing energy in the world, in our nation. And I mean, I just want to add to what you said. You know, this is a call, a rallying call to men in South Africa. You are so important. You are so needed. Step up. Be masculine. Use that deep voice. Use that strength, but use it to nurture and to love and to protect, you know, even if you're unable to provide, you know. And I think this is a big tragedy in our nation.
That's right.
You know? We talked about fatherlessness, but let's talk about unemployment. It's huge.
Yeah.
So when a man is unable to provide, he feels useless, but he's not useless.
Yes.
He still has those strong arms, that deep voice. He has the presence, which can have a massive impact on his family and those around him, to be that man, to bring the masculine.
I think so. And, you know, men say, people say that, you know, being unemployed and not having the power to do certain things emasculates you, you know, and it doesn't.
No, it shouldn't.
It shouldn't. It shouldn't. And I think what we do need, I think there is, you know, good company, you know, is actually one of the most important things that we need, you know, to find men, you know, that will see, you know, your value and see the positives.
Yeah. And bring out the best in you.
And bring out the best in you and call you to say, you are, this is what you are capable of.
Right.
And this is what you can be. And so I think I would love for each of us who are men to be thinking, do we have, you know, people like that in our lives? Can we think of people who have been that in our lives? Give them a call.
Yeah.
You know, and just be around them.
Fantastic.
Yeah, because, you know, often that is, you know, it's one, there's something powerful about presence that communicates to you.
Yeah.
You know, who you are and your value.
You're pitching up.
Exactly. Mm. And so, you know, call, have a conversation, spend some time with that person. And you come out each time, you know, as somebody else and believing that you have what it takes to do, you know, what's ahead of you.
I love it. I mean, that question, that thing you just mentioned there, have what it takes. Now, that's the cry on every man's heart. That's the question, do I have what it takes?
Yeah.
And it's the question that fathers need to answer for boys.
Yes.
And in the absence of fathers, uncles, grandfathers, older brothers need to answer that question for the younger men in their lives. Son, you have what it takes. You are the man. Doesn't matter if you're not earning. Doesn't matter if you haven't got a big car. What matters is you're a man and you've got what it takes to make a significant difference.
Yes.
And
I think, you know, when a man communicates that in your presence, you know, that is fully communicated, you know? You know, because, yeah, there's something about being there and hearing that.
From a man.
From a man, you know, and, you know, you know, you can read all the books, you know, you can, can hear it. And I think that is why in the beginning of, you know, the most manly man, you know, Jesus Christ, you know, God came down and said, you know, this is my son with whom I am well pleased. And so that was an affirmation. That
from the Father to the Son.
To the Son, you know, and it required a presence. You know,
and a voice.
And a voice.
Yeah, a voice.
Yes. And I think those two things are what it actually will translate and and resonate and stay.
Yeah.
And it stayed with him, I think, right until the end. Right. And I think that it can do the same for us as well.
We need that. We need the voice of the Father. And maybe it's an uncle, maybe it's an older one. We need the voice of the older man and the presence of the older man and the attention of the older man and the engagement and the seeing. I see you. I see you, Sitley. I see you and you're good.
Yeah.
And I mean, that's a gift that every father needs to give.
Yeah. I got a lot of that, to be honest, really in the church.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, quite simply because it's people that you see often.
Yes.
You know, once a week. And, you know, if they look at you with approval and they're happy to see you, you know.
It's a powerful.
It's a powerful thing because, you know, you've got your own insecurities. You know, you're coming in. You may have, you know, messed up or you lost at a race at school, you know. You know, but if there's, you know, that joy to see you.
Fantastic.
And
a lot of it is just pitching up. It's being present.
Yeah.
You don't have to say the fancy words or do the fancy outings. Just being present.
Correct.
Just that hand on your shoulder. You know, just, Sitle, brother, you've got it, you know.
Exactly. Beautiful. So one of the things that I will do today in the afternoon is that I will go and hang out with the boys. And we're not going to do much. We're going to talk about what's happening in the soccer. We're going to talk about what's happening there and the opportunities there to talk and the opportunities there for, you know, for topics to arise are really, really rich. And it just fills their tank,
you know, wonderful.
For the rest of the of the coming week. And so, yeah, I'm looking forward to that.
And I'm sure they are longing for that.
Yeah.
Sisley, how do we talk to men who didn't get that growing up? You know, and I think a lot of men didn't. I didn't. You know, you grow up and you arrive at adulthood and there's a wound. There's a lack. There's a, you know, I love what you say. In essence, you brought to life the African proverb that says it takes the village to raise a child.
Correct.
So your mom was an outstanding mother. I mean, we've heard it. I mean, just amazing. And yet she needed men in the community to play their role.
Yeah.
And so how do we talk to men who never got that, you know, who are unfathered and there's a wound? I think it starts with self-awareness, doesn't it?
Yeah.
It starts with looking in the mirror and saying, you know what, I feel less than, I feel inadequate, I feel like I'm an imposter.
Yes.
And I need to go through a process of healing and restoration to be the man that God made me to be so that I can be that to others.
Yeah. I think it's a very, really, really important question because I think that we, you know, as men, the truth is life, as we go through it, you know, begins to show us that there is a lack, you know, there is something wrong. That, you know, why am I behaving in this way without really knowing, you know? Why am I behaving in this way? Why do I keep, you know, doing the things that I'm doing? You know, why am I reacting this way? Why am I overreacting, you know, to certain things? And I think that's something that each of us as men realize as we grow up.
If we're self-aware, if we're honest with ourselves, that some of our behaviors are less than perfect.
Yes.
That we may be drinking too much. Yes. Maybe watching porn. We may be just not pitching. And, you know, it's those behaviors that are not what they should be.
Yes. And I think the opportunities to dwell with that instead of, you know, drowning yourself with alcohol to say, okay, you know, it feels as though I am not overcoming certain things, you know, and, you know, why is that? Do I need to talk to somebody?
Right.
You know, you know, who, you know, do I see in my life perhaps that has, you know, been on a journey that is showing, you know, just something different. Some good fruits. You know, it's showing, you know, a focus and a purpose, you know, some decision making, which is, you know, not common. You know, can I then, you know, have a conversation with that person?
Right.
And just, you know, say, this is kind of, you know, where I am. You know, for some of us, you know, we don't have opportunities to go to therapy.
Yeah.
Because I recommend that for everyone, really.
I couldn't agree more. Yeah. Something. All of us need some therapy.
I believe so. Yeah, I believe so. You know, and for us to be able to express, you know, what's happening and what we are finding. And I think I'm, you know, currently going through therapy. I've just been through so much in this last year, you know, lobolad, got married, you know, miscarried, lost my mom, you know, and you begin to see that I've, you know, you've become numb and you are just surviving, you know, and, you know, you begin to rely on certain habits just to medicate.
Right. Self-medication.
You know, self-medication. You are now wanting, you know, you really no longer interested in life.
Mm-hmm.
And
you're just surviving.
You are just kind of surviving. And, you know, and there are examples of people, you look at people and you hear people and you think, no, there's something wrong here because of what I'm seeing,
right.
You know, with how others are doing and where other men are. And then you begin to say, okay, right, instead of saying that I'm going to figure this out on my own, you know, somehow, you know, let me reach out to somebody.
Fantastic.
Let me talk to somebody. And I believe that if we do that, we are beginning on a process of owning how we feel, you know, of owning the, you know, our story, you know, and beginning to say, okay, how do we start, you know, thinking of things differently, you know, owning a different narrative,
right?
You know, listening to a different voice from within us and all of that.
It's fantastic. I mean, I think the two key steps you're talking about there, number one is self-awareness. Looking in the mirror and saying, you know what? Some of the ways that I'm pitching up as a man, I'm not happy with. You know? The impact that I'm having on people, I'm not happy with. My absence in the lives of those who need me,
correct.
I'm not happy with. Maybe some of the substances I'm taking, maybe some of the material I'm consuming. Just my lifestyle is not what I want it to be. And then talking.
Yes.
Finding a trusted brother, counselor, man, older man, even peers, you know, brother to brother, we can be a tremendously powerful force in each other's lives.
Yeah.
You know, I really honor what you've done now. You spoke very openly and honestly. I've been through a very tough year. It started to really impact. I mean, that's a starting point, Sita, isn't it? You know, when we just talk about those things, share them with brothers, whether it's a therapist or not, it doesn't matter. You know, just the fact that you have a brother, an uncle. I think we often underestimate grandparents and older men. I mean, they've got so much wisdom to bring.
Yes.
The brotherhood, you know.
Yeah.
I'm privileged to do a lot of work with men throughout Africa, you know, through the banks, high-powered executives, you know, and I say to these guys, the wisdom in a group of men, you know, some from Nigeria, some from Mozambique, some from Kenya, Mombasa, you know, but we bring something to each other which is just invaluable.
You know?
Each of them have a journey, and you know, the journey of a man and a woman to where they are is a sacred, sacred thing.
Yes.
You know, we see the outside, don't we? Yeah. You know, I see Sitle, a smiling face, you know, but I don't see what's in there. The journey that got Sitle to where he is, the things that Sitle is dealing with right now as we speak.
Yeah.
And if we allow ourselves to unlock those and give each other the gift of listening to that and give each other the gift of sharing that, absolute magic happens. Beautiful things.
I believe that.
Because Sitle, you've got wisdom that I can benefit enormously from. I've got wisdom that you can. You've had experiences that I've never had that I can benefit from. And likewise. And I mean, the gift we can give each other as brothers in terms of almost refathering each other as peers and moving towards wholeness.
And I think the call for me is, I think, reach out, you know, and create time.
Yeah.
Because I think whatever we are going through often encourages us to continue to self-isolate.
Right, right.
To continue to, you know, be in our own mind, you know, with the hope.
Our cave.
Our own cave, exactly, trying to work it out.
Yeah.
And I think there are those of us right now as we speak that need to reach out to somebody and to create time to be with somebody.
Yeah.
And I think there are those of us who currently have guys in mind who they know,
right,
you know, that actually, you know, they just need a hand. They just need a presence. They need, you know, a shoulder. And I think, you know, instead of being busy on our phones, right, you know, instead of being busy with all kinds of things where we are busy, but, you know, we are not really, what really changes us is relationships.
Absolutely.
And spending time with people. And so I think, you know, think about who you want to reach out to and who you ought to reach out to and make that connection. And I believe that you'll be better for it. And I think the key thing, you know, is continuing in those spaces so that, you know, there is follow through to the initial inspiration, to the Fantastic. Initial, the oxygen that comes in mm-hmm. when we are around people that are positive.
Beautiful. And I think also don't believe what you see. And the reason I say it is often we put on a brave front. You know, they say that the biggest lie that men tell is I'm fine.
Mm.
And, you know, as you said earlier, you're going through stuff. And what we do is we retreat into our cave.
Yeah.
But the image we put across is one of I'm together, I'm fine. You know, but meanwhile, you're dying inside.
Correct.
And I think I learned this lesson profoundly and powerfully through a friend who committed suicide.
Mm.
And I realized looking back, I didn't see.
Mm.
I didn't see what he was going through. He didn't share with me.
Mm.
But if I'd been more attentive and more in tune, I could have seen some of the signs and not believed the lie. The lie is I'm okay, but pushing in deeper. And as men, we need to do that. You know, we don't do that.
I want to just emphasize something there because just recently I was watching something on Netflix and it's really – The words that came out of that was, you know, those of us who seem the happiest on social media, especially in this generation, you know, actually are those of us who, you know, there are serious issues behind there. Mm. And so let's not believe what we see, you know, in our phones, in our, you know, and even the face value, but actually begin to talk.
100%. It's powerful.
Talk to people.
Talking heals. And, you know, women are so good at that.
Yeah.
And we're so bad at that.
Mm.
There's a sense of pride. There's a sense of I need to have it together. You know, I can't be weak. I can't be vulnerable.
Yes.
But vulnerability is strength.
Correct.
And it takes a lot of courage to be vulnerable.
Mm.
See, Claire, this is beautiful. I mean, we can only be the men that God made us to be if we're whole.
Yeah.
If we're okay.
Mm.
And we can only be okay if we're honest with ourselves and honest with each other's brothers and stand with each other to bring healing.
Mm.
Let's jump back to the fatherhood thing because fathers are so important and they're so absent.
Mm.
And a lot of fathers are absent because of the very issues we've been talking about.
Mm.
They don't feel adequate. They don't feel enough. They're drowning themselves in all kinds of addictions and things to ease the pain.
Mm.
But the rallying call to men is to pitch up, man. Pitch up. Be the dad.
Yeah.
And in South Africa, we need to be the father to more than just our own children.
Mm.
We need to be the dad, the father figure, the role model. Young boys look to older men to model to them what it means to be a man.
Mm.
Young girls look to older men to model to them what is a good man and what they can expect. You know, if you as a father treat the mother of your daughter badly, what message are you giving to your daughter?
Yeah.
You're giving her the message that women are worthless, that women are less than, that women deserve to be abused.
Mm.
If you as a father treat women with equality and respect and love and nurture, you are giving your daughter the message, you are valuable. You count. Your life matters. And don't accept any behavior from a man that's less than loving, caring, nurturing.
You know?
And so it's so crucial for us as men to be the role model, to be the father, to be the nurturer, the protector.
Yes. I think we – by virtue of the way that we are made and God has made us, you know, we set that tone.
Yeah.
And the question is, you know, what kind of tone are we setting?
It's a great question.
And I think for each of us, we need to ask ourselves in the different spheres because that's what will determine, you know, the value of things, you know, if we, those people who create time to spend with that young person, you know, then they feel like they're worth it.
Absolutely.
You know, then they feel like, you know, they are, you know, worthy of love and worthy of respect and worthy of these things. For that young woman, you know, we are, that's what we are communicating. And so, yes, I think we, you know, there's a contradiction that exists. You know, we are made beautiful and with so much potential and so many things, and yet, you know, we are fallen. Mm-hmm. And so we are full of mistakes. We get
potential
things wrong.
Potential for bad.
Potential for bad. And so I think we, you know, that is the tension that will always be exist. And I think it's so important that when we do, you know, find ourselves being sucked into this one, that we are surrounded by the kinds of relationships that will remind us of who we are and the kinds of environments. Because when we do that, that's when we are able to live this side more fully. That's when we are able to shine the light that is in us.
And what you're saying is we can't do it alone. We need each other. We need the village. When it comes to having children, just to change tack a little bit, we see in South Africa some quite alarming motivations for having children. You know, I'm going to have a child to get the Social Security grant. I'm going to have a child to keep the relationship together. I'm going to have a child just because I'm careless and I didn't, you know, I had casual sex without protection. We need to really, really focus on teaching people that having a child is probably the biggest thing you ever do. You're bringing another life into this world. And do you have the resources? Do you have the circumstances, the wholeness, the intention, the emotional ability to give that child what they deserve to become a healthy adult? Because if you don't, you should never, ever have a child.
Correct.
Never have a child for the wrong reasons. You're bringing a beautiful life into this world to be abused, to be neglected, to be abandoned, to live a life of destitution.
Yeah.
And that's a terrible thing to do, isn't it, Sihle? I mean, you see the result of that.
I do. I think one of the things that are interesting is the whole adoption process. The whole adoption process opens your eyes, actually, to what it takes to be a parent.
Right.
And so often when somebody wants to adopt, you know, there's a whole array of criteria.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for example, they need to be healthy. You know, their relationships need to be healthy around them, whether it's a marriage or it's they need to be in a place where they're able to support this child. They need to have a safety net around them should something happen, you know, to them. And they need to have really thought about the decision.
Yeah.
Because it can't just be about themselves and what they want. You know, it has to be, you know, about that life that is going to come into the world because, you know, it is so vulnerable.
Yes.
You know, and so I think the adoption process is so powerful because, you know, and that's why the process is over even over a year often.
Mm-hmm.
And then it looks at, you know, all of those things. And so I do think it's, you know, in a country like ours where, you know, poverty is such a challenge and a reason for why people have, you know, children before it's time. And often they find themselves, you know, they need to buy groceries and then they engage in unprotected sex, for example. And then in order to get those groceries, they need, you know, to be in a relationship in order to keep that relationship. You know, they do those kinds of things. And so children are born, you know, where people who are with such little support and with such little care that they often need to be abandoned. In our country, 10,000 babies are abandoned each year.
Wow. That's a tragedy.
10,000 babies.
Tragedy.
Which is really... you know, very sad. And often, you know, sex, the reason why that has happened is because of poverty. It is often because of gender-based violence. Mm-hmm. Some of it is forced.
Rape.
You know, rape, a lot of incest, you know, within families happens. a lot of it, even bullying, is part of the picture. And sometimes people not even knowing, just understanding how sexual reproductive health works.
Right.
And so you find that so many people get, so many babies get abandoned. I don't know if you, we often have an understanding of how many children die because of abandonment. Sure. So out of those 10,000 children, about 3,000 children live.
7,000 die.
7,000 children die
That's
each year.
That's a frightening statistic.
In South Africa.
Frightening statistic.
Yeah. And which is just a massive tragedy for any society. The measure of a society is how we treat the vulnerable, how we treat our children.
Yeah.
And so what happens is that they, you know, these are saved and they go to places like Hotel Hope and many other places. They are found on the side of the road. They are found in like the Jaske River. Sometimes they are found in hospitals, you know, where the mom has left without actually being discharged. And I think what we don't realize is that each time that happens, the future of that child is diminished.
Right.
You know, because it's unlikely that they will have the attachment because they've been rejected.
Yeah.
They're unlikely that they will have the attachment to be able to learn. They will never reach their potential in terms of their physical ability, their thinking ability. And that means that they will probably never be able to finish school because of something that happened that somebody else caused and affected how they were brought up. Then they'll never be able to finish school. They'll never be able to earn to their potential.
Yeah.
Normally, what that means is that they will be joining the long queue of the unemployed and often unemployable. And because they will never, they don't have the mental capacity, you know, to be able to reach their potential, and so I think the reason why we have children, you know, it is something that we really need to look at, I think, as a as a society, and sex is a very powerful thing that has real consequences.
Yeah. Not just for yourself, for other lives.
And not just for other lives, but for, you know, 18 years of the next life and beyond that.
Yeah.
And so we are grateful for places and where children are looked after. But when that abandonment has happened, when those things have happened, really it's, you know, we are putting a bandage, you know, over a really deep wound.
I'm with you.
You know, that we will not be, that will really never be made up for.
Wow. Sobering stuff, eh? Sobering. I mean, before having a child, one needs to really consider what I'm doing. Why am I doing it?
Yeah.
Can I raise this child? Can I do full justice to the child?
Correct.
It's a sacred responsibility.
It is.
See,
and it's not something that all of us, you know, none of us can say, you know, I can do this and I, you know, it's, you know, it's actually, you know, I want to, you know, be all that I can be. I want to be there. I want to be part of the journey.
Yeah.
And I think when that happens, you know, the relationship is intact and therefore the potential of this child, you know, keeps growing and growing and growing.
Yep. And so in essence, before having a child, we should really ask ourselves the very same questions that an adoption agency would ask you. That's what we should do. That should be the checklist as to whether we can have a child. And very few people do that, sadly.
Correct.
Yeah. Sitle, I mean, it's wonderful chatting to you. I can honestly say you're a dangerous man. You know, dangerous to dysfunction, dangerous to orphans, dangerous to fatherlessness, and power to you, brother, man. Keep doing what you're doing, and let's keep conversing. Any final words you'd have to those listening?
I think I've been majoring on this issue of you know, who do you need to speak to begin the process of addressing the things that are really bothering you and the things that you need. I believe that you know, if we begin that process today and, you know, this weekend, you know, the coming week, you know, we will be full of hope, we'll be full of direction, and we will be getting back on the way to making a difference, getting back on the way of being a positive influence on the life of others.
Fantastic. Mm. Fantastic. Just in closing, I want to say, you know, man, speaking to the men now, your life really, really matters.
Mm.
You're valuable. You're designed to make a significant difference. And our encouragement to you today is pitch up.
Mm.
Pitch up. Mm. Be the best version of yourself you can possibly be. Look in the mirror. Mm. Ask yourself, sit on the edge of your bed and ask yourself, are there things that I'm doing that are not positive, that are destructive, that are not good for myself or those around me? And deal with it. Speak to somebody. Look in the mirror. Speak to somebody. Find people who are inspiring. People like Sitle, who can be role models, fathers, who can talk about a positive life, and be that man because your life really matters and you need to pitch up. So pitch up. Because we need you to pitch up. Sitle, thank you so much, brother.
Thank you very much, Craig. It's a joy to be here.